Welcome to Muffliato, a Harry Potter podcast where we fill your ears to prevent you from hearing nearby conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Blake, and today Josh and I spend 3 hours in front of the mirror as we continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire and come now to the 23rd chapter, The Yule Ball. Josh, we're beautifying ourselves, we're getting ready, we're putting on those tuxes, or at least those really nice dress robes, hopefully not secondhand like Ron's, but, you know, hopefully some good robes, and we're putting a bit of product in our hair. We're looking pretty fresh, and we're ready to hit this, pretty much the event of the year, if not the century. I mean, this is going to be big.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've talked at the beginning just how long it's been since the Triwizard Tournament, and therefore the Yule Ball has been held, and certainly an event of the decade, at least I would say for the Wizarding world.
And one that, like, I'm interested, is there a school newspaper or a flyer or a letter?
Yeah,
like,
there's no indication, but that would be amazing, yeah.
Because I would think that paper would be on double time printing, you know, say if it's a fortnightly thing. I think it's now turned into weekly, and it's given all the goss to the latest student kind of connections, right? Like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, well, Harry's a bit late, so I don't think he would be featured in this. But, you know, if they found out, it would be like breaking news, Victor Crumb and Hermione Granger, like Victor,
yes.
You know, Hermione in the library. And it would be this like real kind of, I don't know what type of newspaper that is, like a kind of the paparazzi kind of style.
Yeah.
but I feel like that would be a really cool aspect of Hogwarts, to like be working in that area, or like, you know how there's like those shows where it's like behind the scenes type stuff where, you know, you're dealing with like a little bit of a film crew. Come on, follow me, you know, and we'll go through this organization or something like this, and we'll go to different sections.
Like an open door kind of a architectural digest.
So we, you know, we follow some young witch or wizard who was in charge of this newspaper, this, you know, small print run kind of publication, and it filters out, even if it was like some kind of like the teachers don't know who it's who's doing it, and it's kind of like the secret thing. I think that would just be such an awesome idea that I was thinking about, that would definitely cover the goss of the Yule Ball lead up. But in saying that, how about we learn what's actually in this chapter? Obviously, the Yule Ball is, but it's quite a giant chapter, and so we have quite a few things to discuss.
Blake, yeah, it's a long chapter, but one of the things I noticed is that coming up with a summary, there's so many different things that are happening, but also so many things of varying levels of importance. And so we might leave a few things out in our summary that we'll hopefully get to later, but I'll try and keep the summary as streamlined as possible. The castle is abuzz with the end of the term and the upcoming Christmas holidays. However, everyone is most excited about the upcoming Yule Ball, except for, perhaps, Ron and Harry. When Christmas Day arrives, Harry's first gift comes courtesy of Dobby, who gives him homemade socks. The socks are mismatching, one red and one green, with broomsticks and snitches, respectively. Harry quickly searches for a gift to give in return and gives Dobby some old mustard yellow socks he received as a hand-me-down gift from Vernon Dursley. A large group of students enjoy a snowball fight after Christmas lunch as they fill the time before the Yule Ball. Ron is shocked when Hermione leaves to go and get ready with 3 hours to spare before the dance opens at 8 o'clock. The students arrive outside the Great Hall at 8 p.m., and Harry is impressed with the array of colors, especially compared to the normal school uniform. He is most impressed with how different Hermione looks, deciding she is nearly unrecognizable. The Great Hall is filled with many small tables instead of the long house ones, and the champions and tournament organizers sit with the faculty at the head table. After the opening dance, Harry, Ron, and the Patil sisters sit back down at their table. Both of their dates are disappointed by the fact that they are not returning to the dance floor. Eventually, Parvati leaves Harry with a boy from Beauxbatons. Hermione walks toward her friends gracefully, scarcely aware of her surroundings. Ron accuses her of betraying Harry by attending the dance with Victor Crumb. Hermione storms off, clearly hurt by Ron's comments. Ron and Harry decide to go for a walk outside, and there they overhear several conversations. First, they hear Snape and Karkaroff discussing in hushed tones, something becoming more and more visible. Snape suggests that Karkaroff can leave if he wishes, but that he will stay at Hogwarts. Later, they hear Hagrid and Madame Maxime discussing their giant ancestry. Madame Maxime denies that she is a half-giant and storms off. The dancing continues as Harry and Ron enter back into the Great Hall. As the ball ends, Cedric pulls Harry aside and wishes to return the favor of Harry's help in the first task and give him some advice about how to solve the golden egg's wailing. Harry is unsure about Cedric's advice to take a bath, but doesn't reveal his suspicions. Walking up to the Gryffindor common room, Harry walks in on Ron and Hermione exchanging verbal blows. Her final words to Ron are that he should have asked her earlier and not as a last resort. With that, she storms into the girls' dormitory while Ron stands in the common room looking shocked.
He's completely perplexed, right? It's like...
he has no idea.
Yeah. He's like thinking... Why would she be so upset when, you know, I treat her like she's my last case hope of survival rather than, you know, the first person I want to ask, you know? And so he is he's not quite refined into, you know, sort of a dateable Ron at this stage and of a quality of a man willing to have that relationship. So I think he's got a few years of work in him to go. Like your summary, and we essentially have so many different components of this chapter. I mean, how do you put a key theme to all of that? Is there one, Josh, that you see that kind of wraps all of them up in a nice sort of tight bundle, applies to them all, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think maybe one way of looking at it would be like the idea of fracturing or splintering, okay. or breaking, because you really see that with so many of the different, some romances, some friendships, right? You see Hagrid and Madame Maxime start to split apart. Snape and Karkaroff have a big disagreement. Obviously Harry and Padma, Harry and Parvati have a breakup, and you know, Ron and Padma, there's nothing there at all.
I feel like tensions get worse between the Patil sisters.
That's right.
And Harry and Ron. Like, I don't know if that friendship will ever be the same again. But if they had much of a friendship, but yeah.
Yeah, so you know, one thing that didn't fit into the summary, but again, another fracturing is between, you know, Ludo Bagman and the twins. Just over and over again, there's this idea that instead of bringing people together like the Yule Ball is supposed to do, it's actually breaking people apart. So it's kind of this ironic twist. We can talk about it now rather than in literary devices. But you know, the high point of the togetherness of the Triwizard Tournament, you know, this ball, is actually driving people apart rather than bringing them together.
I know. I feel like as we were talking about that publication that would come out, I feel like the issue that came out after the ball happened, you know, like the follow-up issue would be pretty interesting to read, being like, I feel like there'd be the big masthead or something over the top would be kind of like hearts crushed, you know, or something that. Yeah. And a list of all these failures of some people. There'd be a good story there. Maybe there's a little fan fiction idea for some of our listeners, if anybody's into that sort of thing, to write along
those
lines. Sounds
perfect.
But there is a lot of that fracturing, and you know, it's interesting because there is so many connections between individuals and conflicts going on between individuals, right, that we get. Like, I feel like especially the biggest one probably being Hagrid and Madame Maxime and Ron and Hermione, right? Those are some sort of big ones, and it's all on Ron his side, because Hermione's just there to have like a nice time and enjoy a time where she's maybe let her hair down and it's straight, and you know, she's enjoying herself. But it's a bit ruthless of Ron to step in and be a bit against that. But yeah, I mean, looking at kind of obviously character development, we see a lot of I guess progression on many different characters in the very sort of that surface level of those relationships and things. But I'm interested because Padma and Parvati, like, both those sisters, they're described, I think it's by Dean, as they're considered the prettiest girls in the year.
Yes.
And it's almost like just a throwaway comment. But you know, I'm just curious why they weren't asked any quicker, you know? Like,
I know
they're considered the prettiest girls in the year. Surely where was Dean? You know, where was like Seamus, or like maybe Seamus just had a thing for, I think, Lavender, right? But
maybe they just talked themselves out of it, Blake. They were too intimidated. Yeah,
maybe they thought, no, this is like, why would we ask? And really, it's kind of like, well, you know, you should just ask, and just be okay if they say no, and you go, all right, you know, that's
okay. Or maybe, you know, we don't get a great comment about this, but I mean, you know, it kind of does seem when Harry is asking Parvati, it kind of seems like she's expecting that if she has a date, then she has to get one for Padma as well. I wonder if like maybe they turned down people because they couldn't like both go and like sit at the same table, but they're in different houses. I'm not quite sure. Yeah.
That would be really interesting. Maybe they have a very tight sister pact, or how to do things. But very interesting, because we don't really, you know, it is mentioned obviously that, you know, very, very pretty, I think it would be a great partner for the dance and things like that. But definitely just not where Harry's at right now. Harry does not want to dance, and Padma and Parvati quickly get picked up by some other boys to dance, and kind of, you know, so it's a bit ruthless on Harry and Ron's part for really just ignoring them and not wanting to make sure that they're nice and happy. But I mean, that's kind of them and a bit of Harry and Ron, but like really. You know, Hermione, Victor Crumb, you know, they're pretty much going steady, as maybe maybe my dad and mom used to say, going steady.
Going steady,
like,
yeah.
Classic. I feel like that might have been a parental kind of words to use for dating, but they're not obviously dating. But Ron is extremely jealous, and I think we see that pretty well, evidently.
And I think like the last pages of the last words of the chapter kind of call into question how Ron is even thinking about his own feelings, right? It says Harry didn't say anything. This is right after Hermione storms off. He liked being on speaking terms with Ron too much to speak his mind right now, but he somehow thought that Hermione had got the point much better than Ron had. And it clearly Ron is upset that Hermione has a different date, much more than it being Victor Crumb, although maybe that's part of it. But the fact that she just has someone else is clearly bothering him, but he doesn't even know why, I think. Like, he's just upset, and he's like, why am I feeling this way?
That's a really good point. I think he's kind of in sort of having an internal battle with his emotions right now on why he's feeling the way he is, and really trying to work this out to himself about what this means. And you know, we see eventually he squashes those feelings as he gets the attention from good old Lavender Brown, and now he's one, you know, eventually.
Yeah.
And so but Hermione's always been there, and kind of those feelings will eventually develop and continue to, I guess, flourish after Lavender Brown is done and dusted. But we get this interesting interaction with Karkaroff and Snape, like a little piece that's just thrown in there to progress the plot of like Karkaroff's kind of suspicion and the red herring, like a little bit of a moment of use of red herring as a literary device. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, we see this interesting thing. Well, we don't really see it, but on the arm, right? That they were showing each other. And I just think that there's so many little interactions between different people in this chapter, we can't miss Karkaroff and Snape's one, even though probably the biggest character development maybe is that Hagrid's a giant, a half giant.
Yeah, it's funny reading that so far through the fourth book, isn't it, Blake? Like, it's something that you kind of assume that something's not quite all normal with Hagrid, right? His constantly his feet are described as baby dolphin size and hands as big as dustbins, and you're
like so big.
Something's clearly up here. But also we've had no giants in the books yet, right? Like they're, you know, not really at all. And so it's interesting because even Ron, someone who grows up in the wizarding world, is shocked when he learns this.
I mean, Yes, I know. And you're like, oh, I would have thought that it would have been more obvious to these people. But I guess with, jinxes and things that can go wrong and growth
Perhaps.
potions and stuff, you never know. But it does seem a bit interesting. But I mean, he gets straight up rejected. So, there's just like, it's like Hurt City over for Hagrid. That's
Well,
pretty
and it
ruthless.
really does. Yeah, I think, he was clearly being quite vulnerable with that information. If no one else really knew that at Hogwarts, at least among the
Yes.
students, then, it's not something he enjoys sharing, but he must have thought, well, clearly you're a half giant as well, Madame Maxine. And she just denies it completely. And we come to find out later in the book that, she really is half a giant because of the mission that Dumbledore assigns her, but
Yes.
she
But
denies
she's
it right
just,
now.
she's proud. She's very proud. She's very proud. One of the last character developments for me that I just want to note is Dobby. And this is before all the Yule Ball, before all the drama. And it's sort of like that Christmas morning, that lovely scene where Dobby is just getting gifts and giving gifts. And I think that's a really nice moment, just to kind of increase that relationship. It's one of those moments that you might think back to when Dobby dies, and you're like, oh no, like they had that nice friendship, Harry and Dobby, and this is one of the moments I feel like I think back to when that moment happens, and Dobby dies, and you're like, oh, that's like incredibly sad, but you sort of remember these nice little moments and the fun sort of socks, and oh no, Harry, you messed up, they gave you two of the same kind of sock, and here, split it with these, Dobby. So it's quite nice that Ron comes in and sort of develops that friendship and liking Dobby as well. So I just wanted to mention my boy Dobby, because I feel like
Your boy,
it's
Dobby.
my boy Dobby, because he gets in there, and he's not in a whole lot of movie, the adaptations, and so it's nice when we get him in a book, because I feel like those scenes are often kicked out of the film essentially, to so because we don't need Dobby in there, and we all need Dobby. We all need Dobby, Josh.
We all need a little bit more Dobby in our lives. That's a great point. Well, Blake, as much as we have kind of titled the theme Fracturing, and as much as we've talked about people who've maybe had a less than a great Yule Ball night, looking at you, Karkaroff, Madame Maxine, Patil twins, and others, in addition to Ron and Harry, this really does seem like it was a great night for the vast majority of the students at Hogwarts.
Yeah, I think so. Like, this is one of the events that I feel like would be just a highlight of people's year, surely, because it's like you said, this tournament has not come around in ages, and now we get the Yule Ball as part of that, sort of almost the official party celebration of this event. And so I think so many students would be like, right, this is event to literally write home about, and I think it would be a lot of fun. And so I think for the majority of people, it's an amazing night with the Weird Sisters, the band singing, and everybody having a good time, the food, and everything. I think decorations, it would be very special for those Hogwarts students, especially because it's something that maybe they haven't seen before, and a special extra effort had gone into. So, yeah, very, very interesting there. Any other like world building elements? I feel like we're almost playing with all the pieces that we've been given in this chapter.
Yeah, well, and I think that's why, Blake, even though it is a really long, it's a really long chapter, but so much of it is given to the description of the scenery and of the
Yes,
night
yeah.
itself. And so there's very few things which are really, really of great consequence for the rest of the plot of the book, right? And so, yeah, I think we can probably move on, having discussed the world building. And Blake, I saw that you put this in, and I also did a quick search in my Kindle version of the book to make sure that we could quote this instant. But tell me about the significance of the phrase "pocketed it."
Yeah, so we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I always like, when I hear this, which I listen through the chapters and things like that, and it stands out when I hear pocketed it. And this was just essentially the bane of Stephen Fry, who's the audiobook narrator, one of them, other than Jim Dale. And I believe after the the first or second book or something like that, he was talking to Rowling and saying like, oh, can we change the word pocketed it? Because he was like, you know, pocketed it, it was a real struggle for him. And he's like, could we just quickly change that? And Rowling was very adamant saying no. So this is a more popular sort of bit of information that maybe more people would have seen, like the little video clip where Stephen Fry is telling this. But since he talked to Rowling about that, I think since then, it's been in every single book, knowing that he would have to, you know, narrate it. And so I think that's kind of a funny little thing that Rowling did there for kind of against Stephen Fry, that now he's and I feel like it's a couple of times in the book, like this is, I think a couple of chapters ago, I think I heard it as well, but I thought I'd mention it here. And so pocketed it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the line is Harry has just gotten a reply from Sirius, and it says he pulled Sirius's reply off of Pigwidgeon's leg. Harry pocketed it as they hurried back to the Gryffindor Tower to read it. So good.
So good. I love it. It's a great little thing an author can do, but you wouldn't think to struggle with it. But then some people, you know, you just get caught up on words. And if you say that 10 times, pocketed it, just sounds a bit weird. So I definitely love that. But foreshadowing, Josh, do we see anything or do we foresee anything in this chapter?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's definitely the foreshadowing between Snape and Karkaroff. We're not quite sure what that, you know, end storyline is going to be yet. And yes, ultimately, it is something of a red herring. But it foreshadows what we'll eventually come to learn, you know, later on about things through the Pensieve and through other flash forwards and flashbacks in the book series. So there's that element of foreshadowing. There's certainly the element of relational foreshadowing between Ron and Hermione. This is not their last fight over feelings, but it might be their first big one.
We're not finishing there. You know, that's going to develop. And, you know, some other bits and pieces that we see is, I think Dumbledore at the head table was talking about it, you know, an interesting room he found in Hogwarts. I believe this to be the Room of Requirement. And this is surprising that, you know, Dumbledore, who knows kind of a lot about the castle, does seem to have a sort of an unawareness kind of towards the Room of Requirement, maybe because it changes so much. But you did think that this would be a secret that also Dumbledore would understand, but he seems to have, you know, maybe at least in this moment, not understood it to what it is.
Yeah. Well, and I think later on, when Harry begins to discover the Room of Requirement for himself, he actually references back to this moment, which is quite something as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And aside from that, Rita Skeeter in beetle crawling on the stone statue. This is one of the most clever bits of foreshadowing, I feel like, in this book, or at least in the tournament phase, in the championship phase of this of this book, where we get, you know, the beetle and Hermione's here after the lake task and the underwater task and the beetle crawling on the stone statue. It's just you I don't think you would ever pick it up. You would ever pick it up just on the first read through, and you know, maybe even like just the second read through, you might have missed one or two of these, but it's just a very clever piece of foreshadowing. And so, yeah, I tip my hat there to Rowling there.
Well, Blake, the significance of this chapter is, you know, this is the high point of the Triwizard Tournament calendar. Obviously, that's a really important thing. It's also significant because we see a relationship between Madame Maxime and Hagrid seem to splutter and fail, as well as we get to see Hagrid's half-giant status. And then, after what seems like several weeks, if not months, of frustration with the golden egg, it seems like Harry might finally have a clue that's worth pursuing.
Well, thanks for listening to today's episode. To support the podcast and keep the magic alive, you can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also support us financially at www.buymeacoffee.com/muffliadopod. And to send us questions on our Instagram, email, or website, do so at muffliadopodcast.com. That's muffliadopodcast.com. So to continue the adventure, join us next time as we discuss the 24th chapter of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Rita Skeeter's Scoop.